It's not often the victim of a murder can revisit the place of his or her death with the police and go through step by step what happened to them. But this next story is not a run-of-the-mill murder case, as all will be revealed. Today's story takes us back to the 18th of March 1934 and to a small village hidden within the boundaries of the Ribble Valley, Lancashire, Bashall Eaves. On a wet and windy evening, James Dawson, a local foreman to the area, visited the local pub, the Eddisford Inn, which is now known as the Eddisford Bridge, and this was around 7:15 p.m, and after spending some time there drinking and laughing with some of his friends, he left and made his way home at around 9 o'clock p.m. With his head bowed down and facing into the blistering wind and rain, James made his way towards Back Lane, an unlit narrow road that is just a mile away from the Eddisford Inn, and it would take him around 15 to 20 minutes to get there. Upon approaching the lane, the headlights of two cars came towards him, revealing the shadowy figure of a man standing close to a gate on the left-hand side of the road, which was opposite Back Lane. As the first car passed him, James noticed that four people were inside, and one of the occupants was Tommy Kenyon, a farmhand that worked with James. He was sat in the back seat of the car, but James couldn't make out who the other three passengers were. As the second car passed him, James noticed that the shadowy figure that was stood at the gate had now disappeared. Making his way into Back Lane, James began walking into the darkness, but he had barely walked 30 yards or so when suddenly, out of nowhere, he heard what he described to be a clicking sound, and then he felt a sudden stinging pain towards the back of his left shoulder. Whether or not it had been the alcohol that he had consumed during the evening that had taken the edge out of the inevitable stinging sensation, well, that's open to interpretation. But at the same time, James reportedly said to an investigating officer that he just thought someone was having a lark, and he thought it was nothing more than a stone that was thrown at him. So making his way home to Bashall Farm Hall, it was reported that James arrived back at around 9:20 p.m, but this is open to debate, as with today's technology such as Google Maps, it shows a walk of about 1.3 miles. Now this would normally take around 26 minutes to complete. Back at home, James sat down and he tucked into a roast pork supper that his sister Polly Pickles had prepared for him much earlier in the evening. And at around 9:40 p.m, James had had enough and made his way up to bed, but after a few hours he was experiencing some pain and stiffness in his left arm. It was when he went to take a look he noticed blood was trickling down from the wound from his back. Now, not wanting to disturb the rest of the household, he kept quiet until the following morning. It was around 8 a.m. the following morning when he informed his sister Lily Lee of the pain he was in, and upon looking she was horrified to see a considerable amount of blood and what looked like a gunshot wound on the back. Dr. Cooper from Clitheroe was called for and he came to see James. After examining the wound, he carefully dressed it before ordering James to get to an hospital to have the wound x-rayed. Now, James was reluctant at first, but in the end he was persuaded to do as the doctor suggested. He went with Lily to see a private radiologist in Preston New Road, Blackburn. The x-ray showed that a small egg-shaped bullet was lodged in James's body, just near to his upper left shoulder blade. Urging him to have the object removed, James refused, as being a World War I veteran, he had known many soldiers who walked around with bullets still in their bodies, and as the bullet was nowhere near any vital organs, he signed himself out of hospital and went back home. But after a lot of persuasion from family members, James went back to Blackburn the following morning, on Tuesday the 20th of March, to have this object removed. It was found to have been cut out of a steel rod, of which seemed to have been handmade. Up until this point, James had been reluctant to involve the police, as being a quiet and reserved character, he didn't want any more fussing over the matter. However, and after much persuasion from his family members, he finally gave in, to which the police were finally allowed to begin looking into the shooting. Back at home, and over the course of the next 2 days, James somehow still had the strength to show the police the site of where he was shot. But James's health took a turn for the worse and he was moved to a nursing home in Blackburn. Sadly, on the 22nd of March 1934, James passed away. The cause of his death was being recorded as infection from septicemia and gangrene, so this had now become a murder investigation. The resulting police investigation found that many local residents of Bashall Eaves were interviewed, and yet no evidence or trace of the weapon that could have been used to fire the bullets was ever found. The residents were also reluctant to speak about the incident, which led to more frustrations on the police's behalf. Lancashire Constabulary's senior detective, Chief Superintendent Wilf Blacker himself, felt that as soon as he began investigating the investigation, he was met with a wall of silence by the residents of Bashall Eaves, but he was certain that somebody knew exactly who the shooter was. Officers spent the early hours of Friday, March the 23rd, interviewing the locals, as well as searching hedgerows, outhouses, fields, rivers for any sign of the weapon used in James's murder. And by 3 a.m. that morning, they had interviewed a man at a lodging house in Clitheroe who was later taken away by Superintendent Elliot and also another detective for further questioning at Clitheroe Police Station. By 6 a.m, around half a dozen officers were scouring the land between Warrington and Bashaw Leaves, searching for clues, but unfortunately it was all to no avail. Police Constable Sheldon from the West Riding Constabulary, he said that James was a quiet, inoffensive, sober man with not a single enemy as far as he knew. During the resulting coroner summing up, Sheldon admitted that the people who lived locally liked to play what he called full-blooded jokes, with the coroner asking, "Do people in this district go in for what may be called full-blooded jokes?" To which Sheldon replied, "Yes." The coroner then went on to assume that a catapult may well have been used as the murder weapon by a youth who may have just been having a joke just to make James jump, asking, "Assuming a youth was standing in the gateway with a catapult and he saw Mr. Dawson go by, do you think it might be an idea of a joke to have a shot at him to see him jump?" To which Sheldon replied, "It might well be." Several experiments had also been made during the lead-up to the coroner summary. For example, Superintendent Elliot from the West Riding of Yorkshire Constabulary said that he had made a similar bullet to the one used in James's murder, and he made this in just 5 minutes. And if it had been a rifle that had been used, then it would have blown James's shoulder off, whereas if it had been a shotgun, the bullet would have gone straight through him. Another theory was that an air cane may have been used, but no such weapon had been traced within the neighbourhood, despite the police requiring every household to hand in their guns. The police also carried out extensive searches around the covering areas, looking in fields, under bushes, barn sheds, all in the hope of finding this weapon. Therefore, the only reasonable conclusion was that indeed a catapult was used, and Superintendent Elliot agreed, saying that the experiments showed that it could cause a similar wound to that received by James. But that all changed when Robert Churchill, the country's leading forensic ballistic expert, was called to help with the investigation. And he went on to conclude that a Porteous Arms air cane that fired a single shot was the weapon used in this case. This kind of weapon was a walking stick with a firearm built into it, and it was a common accessory for wealthy Victorian gentlemen as well as the criminal underworld. So what about the theories as to what happened that night? Well, one theory is that James may have caught a glimpse of his attacker on the night he was shot, and that it may have been a young lad just trying to have some fun at his expense, and that he was never intended to be hurt as badly as he was. This being the case, he didn't want the boy to be arrested and charged, so kept quiet, saying that he couldn't clearly see as to who the shadowy figure was. Now, another theory claims that James was targeted as he was seeing several women within the village, and this may have caused some unrest, but no real tangible proof of any cavorting or womanizing could ever be found. Nancy Simpson has herself admitted that James was seeing a married woman from Salford, so perhaps there could be something in this. Perhaps it was a jealous husband who came looking for James to warn him off his wife. But the more plausible of all theories was that the bullet wasn't meant for James but his friend Tommy Kenyon, the same man who James saw in the first car on the night of the shooting. Tommy himself even admitted after James's death that he felt the bullet was meant for him, as he had a fight with Nancy's father, also called Tommy, a few days prior to the shooting, as her father had thought that Tommy Kenyon had put Nancy into the family way, as he called it. Basically, he thought Tommy Kenyon had made his daughter Nancy pregnant. Indeed, Nancy was pregnant and would go on to give birth to a boy she named Jamie, but the father of the baby was a man called Arthur who resided in nearby Mitton. Now, if we are to dig a little deeper into the relationship between Kenyon and Simpson, an interesting documentary was aired on TV back in 1979, which was called Once Upon a Lifetime. And one episode in particular, called The Village That Wouldn't Talk, it focused on the murder of James Dawson. During the interview by Barry Shaw, who spoke with Tommy Kenyon about his relationship with Tommy Simpson, at the time of James's death, Kenyon admits to having a fight with Simpson long before James Dawson was shot. How long before is open to interpretation, but what makes this admission interesting is that Simpson himself told police, as was reported in several newspapers at the time, that he had been attacked and struck on the head with a stick outside of Bashall Hall Farm around 12 months prior to James Dawson being shot, and that his assailant fled into the dark before he could make out who it was. Now, Kenyon himself admits during the interview that at one point he had carried a stick with him for protection and was indeed involved with the scuffle with Simpson at around 11 p.m. one evening sometime before Dawson's death. So here we have two men who both seemingly hated each other for one reason or another, and over the course of time leading up to the death of James Dawson, Both men would often been involved in fights, again, as admitted by Tommy Kenyon. So you do have to ask yourself, was Tommy Simpson the man who shot James Dawson on that fateful evening, mistaking him for Tommy Kenyon? After all, Tommy Kenyon and James Dawson liked to visit the Eddisford Inn together, and Simpson would surely have known they both frequented the same inn at the same time on regular occasions. But on this night in particular, Kenyon had travelled to the Red Pump Inn, leaving James spending the evening with other friends at the Eddisford. But that's not where Simpson's possible involvement ends. During the police investigation into James Dawson's murder, a dog owned by James was found on Simpson's land, and it was obvious it had been shot. However, whatever was used to shoot the dog, the bullets or a man-made projectile like the one used to shoot James hadn't fully gone through the dog. But when the dog was sent for further examinations, the projectile could not be found as it had already been removed, presumably by the person who shot the dog in the first case. You have to ask, was the dog used as target practice by the same person who went on to shoot James? Going back to the TV documentary, and another revealing piece of information that could perhaps turn this case upside down was a piece of information Tommy Kenyon had never told anyone else in all the years since James's death. And this involves a man called Henry Blessant, nephew of Tommy Simpson, who was asked by Simpson to take a sack or a bag and to dispose of it. Now, Henry lived in Warley Nab with his mother and worked for Simpson on his farm. When asked what was in the bag, Kenyon admits to never asking Henry what was inside, but he had a good idea.
"Little Henry Blessant, tell me something, I haven't told nobody else yet."
"And he said what?"
"He said to me, he says, Uncle Tommy's done a sack down to our house, like, and dirt walling up with it."
"Yeah."
"And he said he thought police were looking for what were in that sack. I don't know, bloody certain to know about it, like."
"I don't know. Well, I can't see him going down to Christiana's with that."
"Well, they were getting out of way for a bush, eh, weren't it, you know.
And to Christiana.
What there is,
out. And to Christiana, they crowned him with it."
"I don't know. It's funny to take
a... I wonder where...
It's a bit queer to take a sack down there, like when police were out and about, weren't it?"
I can't imagine that.
"What's the story about the bag, Tommy?"
"It were Henry Blessant. Tell me, worked for Tommy Simpson."
"Who was Henry Blessant?"
"Tommy were his uncle. Tommy Simpson and Henry's mother were brother and sister. They lived on Walley Nab. And he took this bag down here out at Road."
"So this bag was taken down after the murder?"
"Aye."
"And what was in the bag?"
"I didn't ask him. I had an idea like to tell me, really, wasn't it? Beckett. I weren't going to dig into it because, you know what I mean, it didn't outdo me, had it? What were it, bag?"
"What do you think was in the bag?"
"Well, gun and part of pokers were left."
"And did you tell the police this?"
"No."
"And you didn't tell the police either about the assault when Tommy Simpson assaulted you because he thought you were going out with Nancy?"
"No, I didn't tell him that."
"But why didn't you tell them about the bag?"
"Well, they never asked me about that."
"Perhaps that held the clue or the key to the whole thing. And if Wilf Blacker had have known that, and Wilf Blacker was a very clever detective, there was no doubt about that, that might have provided him with the lead that he wanted."
So again, it seems evidence is now starting to point to Simpson as being the man who shot James, but I guess it's all circumstantial and we will probably never know who the killer was. But just to throw more fuel onto the fire, 10 days after James's death, Tommy Simpson was found hanging after committing suicide inside one of the barns on his farm. Now, it is well documented that Simpson was having difficulties with contaminated milk that he was producing from his farm, and he was facing the possibility of being ruined due to a summons being issued. So you could argue, perhaps the stress of losing everything he had may have been too much, and it eventually pushed him over the edge leading to his suicide. So what of the inquest into the death of James Dawson, and where are we today? Well, after a couple of months of delays and despite an extensive search for the murder weapon, as well as interviewing hundreds of people, the final verdict on his death was left as an open verdict, as the court jury were not satisfied he had been shot in the typical sense of the word, and because his death was due to septicemia. James Dawson was buried within the grounds of All Hallows Church in Mitton on Monday, the 26th of March 1934. To this day, James Dawson's murder is still unsolved, or is it? I will leave you with the final words of Tommy Kenyon. You can read into these what you will, and make your own conclusions, but no matter what, March the 18th, 1934 was truly a day of horror in every sense of the word.
Tommy, have you got any other theories about the murder?
No, all I can think is it were intended for me, that's all.
Intended for you?
Well, I think so.
Now, why should you think that you were the man who was meant to be murdered that night?
For simple reason, with me having a do with him and then playing about with his daughter, I fancy thought, well, you'd not play about with you no more, Lark. I'll don't bugger into it. And Jim and him, they were as thick as thieves. Well, not as thick as thieves, but they'd talk and, you know, go into Thoxenmark, buying a car or something of that sort. And me and Tommy, well, we weren't all that bad, but we were enemies, you know what I mean. And I couldn't see him shooting Jim Dawson. I couldn't.
Tommy, it seems to me that you think that you know who did it.
Oh, I do.
But he meant the bullet for you.
For me. I always thought it for its start, and I do. I always will do as long as I live.
So I hope you enjoyed listening to this latest episode, and if you've got any comments, any concerns, if there's anything I've missed out or anything which didn't seem true, just comment down below and I will answer as soon as I can. You can also follow me on Twitter, on Instagram. Again, the links I will leave in the description down below. But in the meantime, thank you very much for listening. I really do appreciate it.